Well, this morning I want to take another look at the passage that we looked at last time. It's about the time when the people of Israel were standing on the doorstep to the promised land. And the Lord told Moses to send scouts into the land to spy it out, to bring back a report to the community, to let everybody know what it looks like. And what we saw last time was that how their report was based on their interpretation of what they saw. There were two, Joshua and Caleb, who brought back a good report, and they said, "We can go into this land because the Lord is with us. Let's go in. Let's go and take it." Well, there were 10 who said, "No, we can't go in there." And whenever the Israelites encountered a situation that they didn't like, they followed the same script for the most part. They said, "We should just go back to Egypt. Life was better for us back in Egypt." They followed the same script. And their script didn't change because their core beliefs didn't change. Their core beliefs didn't change because they didn't internalize their experience with God. They just forgot about their encounters with God, how God led them out of captivity in Egypt, doing miracles. They just forgot about that. They didn't internalize their encounters with God. And how quickly we forget, don't we? How quickly we forget about what the Lord has done for us. And that's why we have things like communion that remind us. That's why we come here every Sunday on the Lord's Day, the Sabbath day, to set apart one day out of seven to come here and worship Him, reminding ourselves of what life is all about, what we're all about. We need those reminders because how quickly we forget. And this morning I wanted to revisit this account because there's another life application that we can glean from this account. It's a passage, this passage is flowing with milk and honey, right? And so I want to milk this passage here. So if you have your Bible, turn to Numbers chapter 13. And we're going to begin in verse 26. Numbers 13, beginning in verse 26. They came back to Moses and Aaron and the whole Israelite community at Kadesh in the desert of Paran. There they reported to them and to the whole assembly and showed them the fruit of the land. They gave Moses this account. "We went into the land to which you sent us, and it does flow with milk and honey. Here is its fruit. But the people who live there are powerful, and the cities are fortified and very large. We even saw descendants of Anak there. The Amalekites live in the Negev, the Hittites, Jebusites, and Amorites live in the hill country, and the Canaanites live near the sea and along the Jordan." Then Caleb silenced the people before Moses and said, "We should go up and take possession of the land, for we can certainly do it." But the men who had gone up with him said, "We can't attack those people. They are stronger than we are." And they spread among the Israelites a bad report about the land they had explored. They said, "The land we explored devours those living in it. All the people we saw there are of great size. We saw the Nephilim there. The descendants of Anak come from the Nephilim. We seem like grasshoppers in our own eyes, and we look the same to them." That night, all the members of the community raised their voices and wept aloud. All the Israelites grumbled against Moses and Aaron, and the whole assembly said to them, "If only we had died in Egypt or in this wilderness. Why is the Lord bringing us to this land only to let us fall by the sword? Our wives and children will be taken as plunder. Wouldn't it be better for us to go back to Egypt?" And they said to each other, "We should choose a leader and go back to Egypt." So what we find here is that Caleb had a positive, optimistic report about what he saw, but the other scouts, the other 10, gave a negative, pessimistic report. And when the whole community heard the bad report, what was their reaction? They cried out with a loud voice. They wept aloud, it says, Right? The community was struck with fear and pandemonium. What led to this reaction? What were they reacting to? Were they reacting to something they saw? I think the answer to that question is yes and no. No, they weren't reacting in fear because of what they saw with their own eyes. They were reacting in fear because of what they heard with their ears. And the words they heard with their ears created an image in their mind. They saw mental images in their mind. The whole Israelite community reacted in fear because of the words spoken to them. Do you know about 2 weeks ago, a little less than 2 weeks ago, on Tuesday, police came to this campus. And there was high security called for on this campus here. The next day, half the students didn't come to school. Why? Because of words. Because of words in a phone call threatening, terroristic acts. Those actions were taken because of words spoken in a phone call. Words matter. You know, if you're on a plane and you see an old friend named Jack, and you're walking down the aisle of the plane and you see Jack sitting there, don't say, "Hi, Jack." It's my kind of joke. No, I actually know a guy named Jack. He's a pastor named Jack. And I said, "Hi, Jack." And he said, "Don't ever say that at an airport." Words elicit reactions. What if all the scouts said pretty much the same thing as Caleb? Right? What if they all said pretty much, what a choice piece of land. Oh, it's flowing with milk and honey. Well, what a blessing it's going to be for us to actually have our own land in this beautiful land. Yeah, there are fortified cities there, and there's some impressive-looking people, but, that's kind of to be expected, and it's nothing that we cannot overcome. All we need to do is follow the Lord into this land, and He will take care of it. He will take care of us. Do you think the people would have raised their voices and wept aloud if all or the majority of the spies said something like that? Words can create peace. They can create fear. Words can create hope and confidence, or they can create defeat and despair. Words can be the difference between life and death. That's what I want us to think about this morning. To think about our words. James chapter 3, verses 5 and 6 says, "Consider what a great forest is set on fire by a small spark." Right? A few weeks ago, there was a fire, right? Makakilo site. Because two kids were playing with matches. All it took was a spark to lit the match or lighter, and acres were burned. The tongue also is a fire, a world of evil among the parts of the body. It corrupts the whole body, sets the whole course of one's life on fire, and is itself set on fire by hell. See, the words you speak, the words you think, can set the course of your life. The words you think, the words you speak, can be set on fire by hell. That's what James is saying, right? Now, isn't that what happened to the people of Israel? It set their course to destruction. All hell broke loose in the community. Why? Because of words. Because of words spoken, because of words heard, because of words that were accepted. Now, let's read what happened after the Israelites said they wanted to choose a different leader and go back to Egypt. Numbers 14, beginning verse 11. The Lord said to Moses, "How long will these people treat me with contempt? How long will they refuse to believe in me in spite of all the signs I have performed among them? I will strike them down with a plague and destroy them, but I will make you into a great into a nation greater and stronger than they. And then what happens next is Moses then intercedes on behalf of the Lord and on behalf of the people. But here, what the Lord points out is the people refuse to step into the land because they fail to accept and internalize the signs that he showed them, the evidence that he gave to them that he was blessing them. Let's read on in verse 26. The Lord said to Moses and Aaron, "How long will this wicked community grumble against me? I have heard the complaints of these grumbling Israelites. So tell them, as surely as I live, declares the Lord, I will do to you the very thing I heard you say. In this wilderness, your bodies will fall. Every one of you, 20 years old or more, who was counted in the census and who has grumbled against me, not one of you will enter the land I swore with uplifted hand to make your home, except Caleb, son of Jephunneh, and Joshua, son of Nun. As for your children that you said would be taken as plunder, I will bring them in to enjoy the land you have rejected. But as for you, your bodies will fall in this wilderness. Your children will be shepherds here for 40 years, suffering for your unfaithfulness, until the last of your bodies lies in the wilderness. For 40 years, 1 year for each of the 40 days you explored the land, you will suffer for your sins and know what it is like to have me against you. I, the Lord, have spoken, and I will surely do these things to this whole wicked community which has banded together against me. They will meet their end in this wilderness. Here, they will die." See, what was the Lord responding to? The people had said, "If only we had died in Egypt or in this wilderness." And the Lord said, "I heard what you said. And so, I'll give you what you asked for. I'll let you die in the wilderness. Because I heard what you said, and what you say matters." Now, how would you feel if you were one of the 10 scouts who came back and gave a bad report? How would you feel if you were one of the 10 scouts, right, who gave the bad report with the words that you chose to use, and as a result, you are not going to enter into the promised land. You are going to die in the desert. Not only you, but everyone else in the whole community. Do you know that there are over 1 million people? Probably over 1 million people in the nation of Israel at the time. Think about the population of the state of Hawaii. Imagine your words having an impact on the destiny of the entire population of Hawaii. That's pretty much what happened. Your words having an impact on the destiny of your children, where they would have to wander around in a desert wilderness for 40 years. Some of them maybe 19, right? Because anyone 20 years and older would die and never enter the promised land. So the 19-year-old, so 40 years later, 59 years old. I can relate to that. Not until they're 59 years old can they finally enter the promised land, or younger, 40 years. How would you feel if you were a parent or grandparent who said, "If only we had died in Egypt or in this desert wilderness," and have the destiny of all these people hanging over your heads? The scouts were struck dead in the entire community. Children, parents, grandparents had to go back into the desert, wander around for 40 years until all of them who were 20 years old and older died in the desert. And that's what happened. See, Proverbs 18:21 says, "The tongue has the power of life and death." The words you think, the words you hear, the words you speak can change the course of your life and the life of other people. Do you believe this? You know, there was a research study on the effect of paramedics and what they say to people that they come to the aid of in a crisis. They wanted to see if words made a difference, okay? When people were in a crisis and paramedics came and tended to them, whether their words made a difference, whether the people were conscious or unconscious. So they had an experiment that lasted for about six months. And in this experiment, the experimental group was instructed to recite this paragraph to the patients that they tended to. Okay? And this is what they were told to say. The worst is over. We are taking you to the hospital. Everything is being made ready. Let your body concentrate on repairing itself and feeling secure. Let your heart, your blood vessels, everything, bring themselves into a state of preserving your life. Bleed just enough so as to cleanse the wound, and let the blood vessels close down so that your life is preserved. Your body weight, your body heat, everything is being maintained. Things are being made ready in the hospital for you. We're getting there as quickly and safely as possible. You are now in a safe position. The worst is over. After 6 months, they compared the recovery rate between patients who heard those words and patients who didn't hear those words. And do you know the patients who heard those words were more likely to survive the trip to the hospital? They recovered more quickly. They had shorter stays in the hospital than the patients who didn't hear those words. The control group, where the paramedics didn't say those things. Even when someone is unconscious, words can be heard, right? Your hearing is one of the last things to go, right? When you're on your deathbed. You can still hear. There was a man who had gone into cardiac arrest and he was brought into the hospital. And the doctor in the emergency room said to the paramedic who brought the man in, "Looks like this fellow is going to be all right, doesn't it?" And the paramedic replied, "It looks like he's going to be fine." And suddenly, as soon as they said that, this man's erratic heartbeat fell into a normal rhythm. This man was like unconscious. And suddenly, his heart rate fell into a normal rhythm. The words you speak, the words you hear, the words you accept to be true can be the difference between life and death. At a drug rehab center, there was a man who went up on the roof yelling, shouting, like he was going to jump off. He looked like he was in really bad shape, like he was just losing it. The police came. The EMS personnel came. For 2 hours, they tried to calm him down and get him to, you know, stop doing what he was doing, get him off the roof. Nothing they said was working. So finally, after 2 hours, the staff social worker came on the scene. And what she said were six words. "Can you tell me what hurts?" The man paced around for a little while more, but then he sat down and started talking to her. All it took was six words. "Can you tell me what hurts?" The tongue has the power of life and death. The words you say to yourself, the words you say to other people, the words you accept to be true makes a huge difference. It can make a huge difference, right? They affect your body. How many of you like to ride roller coasters? You find it thrilling. How many of you find it terrifying? Okay. Some of us find it thrilling. Some of us find it terrifying. When our kids were little, we went to Disneyland, and I told this story before. We were on a roller coaster, and just before the final descent on the steep descent, right, the camera takes your picture. Yeah? And so after the ride, we went to go look at our picture. And in this picture, we're a family of four, right? In this picture, there's only three of us. What's wrong with the camera? What's something wrong with the camera? This is a faulty photograph. Well, no, come to find out. The reason why there's only three out of four of us in the picture was because one of us was ducking the whole time. That's why there's only three out of four. There was an experiment done with two people riding on the same roller coaster. One found the roller coaster ride thrilling, and the other one found the roller coaster ride terrifying. The body of the person who believed that the ride was terrifying, right, produced biochemicals, stress hormones that can weaken the immune system over time. The body of the person who believed the ride was thrilling, yay, also produced biochemicals, interferon and interleukin, that serve and strengthen the immune system. What's the difference? It was what they believed. It was how they perceived. It was how they interpreted their experience, right? That affected their body. Different biochemical reactions because of opposite beliefs, opposite interpretations, opposite thoughts, opposite words that they attributed to the experience. You know what a placebo is, right? A placebo is a substance that has no medicinal properties to it, like a sugar pill that's given to a person. And there's something called the placebo effect, where a person is given the placebo and it has positive results. You know, studies have found that up to 70% of cases like bronchial asthma, angina, right, chest pain, duodenal ulcers. How many of you know where your duodenum is? Nurses? Medical professionals? Oh, because you had something done? Some kind of procedure? Christy taught you. Okay. The duodenum is a small section between your stomach and your small intestine, and you can have ulcers there. Okay. But up to 70% of cases for bronchial asthma, angina, duodenal ulcers, the placebo effect produces, you know, positive results. You know, 70% produce positive results. Believing words of healing can lead to healing, can release healing. This is amazing. In an experiment on nausea, patients with nausea were given medication, and they were told this is a strong anti-nausea medication. And the patients got better. But what they didn't know was that medication was actually to induce nausea. Believing the words of healing reversed the effect of the medication. Are you aware of the words that you think, the words that you speak, the words that you dwell on, the words that you speak to yourself, the words that you speak to other people? The words we receive and believe affect not only our mind, they affect our body. Right? They affect our emotions. They affect our spirit. They affect the course of our life. Right, last time I talked about scripts, right? Scripts, how the people of Israel followed this script. It's like whenever they encountered a difficult time, we should have gone back to Egypt. We never should have left. It would be better for us to die in Egypt or die in this wilderness. Right? They just continue to follow the same script, the same actions, the same reactions. And they're based on their core beliefs. Beliefs are words that we accept to be true. We all have internalized words that we say to ourselves. We say to ourselves words consciously and unconsciously. We have automatic thoughts. As soon as something happens, we react, or automatically we think something. And we don't realize that we have this automatic thoughts. And the thing about those automatic thoughts is that they can be off, can be not true. But where are they coming from? They're coming from our beliefs, the beliefs that we have, right, that are there, that we have internalized. This is why King David wrote in Psalm 19, verse 14, "May the words of my mouth and the meditations of my heart be pleasing in your sight, O Lord, my rock, my redeemer." That's a verse that's worth memorizing. Don't you think? And that's a verse that's worth saying to yourself. May the words of my mouth and the meditations of my heart be pleasing in your sight, O Lord, my rock and my redeemer. Meditations of your heart are the words that you have internalized. They're the words that you dwell on. They're the words that you live by. So we need to be mindful not only of the words that are on our lips, we definitely need to be aware of that and to, you know, monitor that, but we also need to monitor the meditations of our heart, the words that we have internalized, what we're believing. The words stored in your heart that you believe to be true affect you physically, emotionally, spiritually. They influence the course of your life. They influence the people around you, for good or bad. We need to be careful, don't we? We need to be careful with the words, because words have power. There's power to words, right? Be careful with the words you say to yourself, the words you say to others, the words you think about, the words you speak, the words you say to your spouse, to your children, to people at work, family members. Your words can bless or they can curse. Your words have the power of life and death. They affect spirit, soul, and body. As we saw with the people of Israel, your words can affect the course of your life. It can affect your destiny. It can affect the destiny of the people around you. Words are powerful. Psalm 19. Verse 14, a good verse to memorize. Why don't we memorize it this morning? Okay? May the words of my mouth and the meditations of my heart be pleasing in your sight, O Lord, my rock and my redeemer. Let's say it again. May the words of my mouth and the meditations of my heart be pleasing in your sight, O Lord, my rock, my redeemer. And we're referring to the Lord as my rock and my redeemer. Yeah. One more time. May the words of my mouth and the meditations of my heart be pleasing in your sight, O Lord, my rock and my redeemer. Amen. Words are powerful. Okay. Something to remember to recite. Yeah. And, you know, words are powerful, so it's not only the negative words that we need to be mindful of and that we need to watch out for, but we also can be mindful to speak forth the positive words, the encouraging words, right? The words that speak life and not death, right? And so I have a suggestion to you, an assignment to you, okay? Today, if you have family, before you, or maybe when you have dinner together, if you eat dinner together on Sunday, at that dinner table, speak an encouraging word to each and every family member. And say something like, when I look at you, I see, and finish the sentence. And something positive, right? Something positive, something encouraging, something that speaks life, not death, right? Blessed, not curse, right? But when I look at you, I see, finish the sentence.